Salam sejahtera, anda bersama saya Nala Huda dan Awani Global pada minggu ini masih memberi tumpuan kepada krisis antara Ukraine dan Rusia, khususnya bagaimana negara lain bertindak terhadap konflik berkenaan. Poland antara negara pertama yang membuka sempadannya kepada mereka yang mencari perlindungan daripada keganasan di Ukraine. Malah sekumpulan rakyat Malaysia, kaki tangan kedutaan Malaysia sendiri yang membuat perjalanan selebih 10 jam dari Kiev turut mendapat perlindungan setelah tiba di sempadan Poland. Dan untuk menceritakan lebih lanjut mengenai sumbangan dan peranan besar yang dimainkan Poland sepanjang konflik ini, sudah bersedia bersama saya Duta Besar Poland ke Malaysia, Christoph Demnitsky. Thank you, Your Excellency, for joining me today. Unfortunately, we're speaking under very unfortunate and difficult circumstances. But between the last time we spoke around June of last year and up till now, what have been some of the major changes in the region that could perhaps explain the situation today?
Well, of course, one of the main changes and one of the main problems that we are all going through, including Malaysia, is the COVID, of course. And the COVID put unprecedented strain on the economy and on the medical services, not only in Poland, but in most countries in Europe, as well as in Malaysia. I mean, it's a worldwide phenomenon that I have just mentioned. This is one thing. The second thing is a couple of months ago, we had the refugees, so-called refugee, or I would call them migrant, crisis with Belarus. And looking at it from today's perspective, I think we can quite clearly see the reason for that. I mean, it was a crisis engineered by Belarus and backed by Russia with, I would say, unfortunate people who were promised a safe passage, easy passage to Europe, brought to Belarus by the Belarusian government. And I have to say they had to pay for the trip. Usually it would cost them around 6,000 euros. Who the Belarusian government later tried to push across the border to Poland. The idea was to create a havoc, really havoc on the border, where thousands of them trying to get across completely illegally across the border, destroying border fortifications, throwing stones at the border guards and Polish police. It did not work. It did not work because we did not fall for the trap laid then by the Belarusians and the Russian backers. So when I look at it from this perspective of this Russian aggression against Ukraine, I do see it as a first step, as a preparatory step before this war. So these are the two main issues: weakening of Poland, of Ukraine, of Europe, of NATO, because of the COVID crisis. And the second one, this fake migration that was supposed to create disruption on the border, and also to disrupt the relations within the countries of the European Union. Now we have the war. Now we have a full-scale aggression by the Russian Federation against its peaceful neighbor for no reason whatsoever. I mean, the reasons provided by Russia are so flimsy, so completely unbelievable that I'm surprised they didn't really find a better reason for that. This crisis generated the biggest humanitarian crisis in Europe since the end of the Second World War. We have now 4 million refugees escaping from Ukraine. We do expect the number to reach 10 million. This 10 million, if it really happens, I hope it wouldn't happen, but if it does, it would be more than the number of Afghan refugees running from the Soviet invasion in the 80s, mostly running to Pakistan. Pakistan and Iran, but primarily to Pakistan. So that was unprecedented humanitarian crisis, just as this one seems to become. It is already very bad, but it could become worse. We have now in Poland more than 1 million refugees. We get across the border something like 140,000 every day. It depends on the day. Sometimes it's less, sometimes it's more, but it's roughly about 140,000.
Yeah. How has Poland responded throughout the entire conflict?
Well, Poland is a part of NATO and a part of European Union, and our response is synchronized with the response of our partners. We fully support the political, the economic, and the military means which NATO and EU countries have decided to impose. We were probably the first country to propose very severe economic sanctions. And we do believe that in order to force Russia really to withdraw and to force them to stop this unwarranted war which they unleashed there on their neighbor, that the sanctions really should be even stronger than they are. And we are, as a country, we are ready to pay the price. We are ready to pay the economic price for that. We do import some quantities of fuels from Russia. We import some coal from Russia. We are ready to put a ban on that imports. And we hope that other countries would follow suit. We have to finish this conflict really as soon as possible because the devastation and human tragedy is too much.
Yeah. You mentioned economic sanctions. How effective have these sanctions been towards Russia?
How effective? Yeah. How effective these sanctions have been? I think they will. It takes time to bite, definitely. But if we look at the Russian stock exchange and then the rate of exchange of the Russian ruble and at the difficulties that they are experiencing with even basic necessities today, they are biting. They are already biting. There's no doubt about it. Now, having said that, you know, I've been many times to Russia, and I know Russians. And to be quite frank, I'm sorry for what they have to go through. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry about the government, but I'm sorry about the ordinary Russian people. And I believe that even for themselves, this war is a terrible tragedy, and unleashed by a government on which they have absolutely no influence. This is something they have to change themselves as soon as possible, really. To at least have a government that is responsible to their own people, to their own country, and is a responsible member of the world community as well.
Yeah.
So they are biting. Yes, the sanctions are definitely biting.
Your Excellency, you mentioned how sorry you feel about how Russians are coping with the war themselves. How do the Poles feel about the war? Do they feel very close to the violence that's happening just next door?
You know, we are neighbors of Russia for centuries. So we know very well by our own experience, because a large part of Poland used to be a colony of Russia. So people may not know about it in Malaysia, but as long as India was colonized by the British for as long, Poland was colonized by the Russians. So we know the brutality with which Russians decide to subdue their neighbors. We fought to rebellions or insurrections in the 19th century. We fought a bloody war against Russia in 1920. It was the Battle of Warsaw in 1920, was one of the most defining battles in the history of the world, because it stopped the Bolshevik advance against Western Europe. That was the aim. And and then after the Second World War, after the infamous Ribbentrop-Molotov Pact, and the two countries, Nazi Germany and Communist Russia, invading Poland at the same time, and after the Second World War, after the Soviet Union defeated Nazi Germany, we became a part of the Soviet Union, really, so associate state, if you like to call it. You know, I have again this Indian example. The British rule in India divided the country into two kinds of states. One was the one kind, one, the 3/5 of India was ruled directly by the British, but the 2/5 of India was ruled by local princes, 562, as I remember, of these princely states there were. Now, after the Second World War, the satellites of the Soviet Union were a kind of princely states. Theoretically, they were sovereign, but in reality, the key decisions were all taken in Moscow. And it was only in 1989 that we managed to free ourselves from this Russian yoke. And Ukrainians also did free themselves at that time, 2 years later, in 1991. However, in case of Ukraine, Russia was not willing to accept that Ukraine is a free, sovereign, separate state. And Prime Minister Putin, a number of times, was telling that Ukraine really is a sort of a mistake of history, as he used to call it. So we do sympathize with Ukrainians very strongly, and we help them to the best of our ability. As I said, we have supplied them with military equipment. We have supplied them with defensive equipment, including very well-functioning anti-aircraft rockets. So I've already spoken about the help that we render to Ukrainian refugees. So we are hopeful that Russian Federation finally come to its senses and stops this aggression, completely unnecessary. Even for themselves, unnecessary.
You mentioned military assistance, and that's, I think, what's been making headlines recently. Can you tell us a little bit about Poland's offer to send fighter jets to Ukraine and how that's stirred a little bit of different views in NATO?
Well, to the best of my knowledge, and I'm sitting in Malaysia, and the details on the negotiations do not reach me here. To the best of my knowledge, the question of the mix is still being considered between negotiations between my government and the American government, United States, as to modalities on how to transfer the planes to Ukraine. What are the results? I don't know. I simply don't know. They have not been finished yet, as far as I know. They're still ongoing. And for obvious reasons, they are not made public. So this is as much as I can tell you. Not because I don't want to tell more, but because I just don't know.
Yeah. But clearly, Poland sees there being an urgent need to supply more help, more military assistance to Ukraine. So how does Poland understand the current developments in Ukraine right now? And how does Poland understand the events that are to come in the coming weeks? What can we expect?
Well, the situation, as I see it personally, is that Russian armed forces have not reached their goals that they put themselves put before themselves in the very first days of the invasion. And now they changed strategy to more a terrorist one, which means if they cannot defeat the Ukrainian army on the ground, they would try to terrorize the population, which means going for bombings of cities, shellings, rocketing cities, even destroying hospitals and children's hospitals, cutting water supply, generally food supply, trying to starve the population. And remember, it's winter now. The temperature is well below zero, especially at night. And life is very tough in these circumstances. It does not, it's not strange to me, because this is the strategy that the Soviets employed in Afghanistan in the 80s, indiscriminate murdering of the civilian population. This is what they did in the year 2000 in Grozny, in Chechnya, under this current president of Russia, by bombing the city completely to the ground, killing 90,000 people who lived there. There were, you know, Chechens, Russians, people of other nationalities, everybody lived there. And I remember the then commander of Russian forces in Chechnya, General Lebedev, had very strong he was a general, he was a military man, but he was strongly opposed to it, and he voiced it. He was not silent about it, and it's so strange that the Russian commanders today do not raise their voice against it, against the behavior that is absolutely unacceptable in war. I mean, there are also certain rules of war. You can find an arm, you can fight armed opponents, but you generally are not supposed to kill innocent people. You should try to avoid doing it anyway. So this is something which is which for me is kind of very dirty in this war now going on in Ukraine. And I truly sympathize with Ukrainians that they have to go through.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned opposing voices in the Russian military, but if we look at some of the earlier reports, especially on social media and some of the independent media in Russia, there were opposing voices, there were protests on the streets, but there's none to be heard of now because they've been silenced. What exactly is going on in the streets of Moscow in Russia? Are there still opposing voices, and what happens to those who oppose the war that's going on?
We understand that there is a civil society which is quite strongly opposed to this war. But, you know, in Russia today, you cannot even call it war. It's called special military operation, or it's called a crisis. If you call it war, you can get to jail for 15 years. So this is, you know, a way of silencing its own population. I do have some unconfirmed reports. I'm not covering Russia from Malaysia, so obviously I don't know. But what I hear is that there was a strong letter signed by a couple of thousand Russian scientists about it. So that is important. So, but you know, when I look back at history, when I look at the history of the Soviet Union, there was in the Soviet Union a strong um, sometimes better organized, sometimes disorganized, but quite effective movement for democracy. People who, these dissidents, you know, the people who were looking for change, for creating a responsible government, for opening Russia to various ideas, political, social, and other ideas, for doing away with censorship, which was very strong in Russia in the Soviet Union time. These people were very brave. I must say that in all the communist states there were such movements as I just mentioned. But the Russians paid the heaviest price for disobedience. So I presume that this is also a movement that has to emerge in Russia, because if it hasn't emerged yet, I don't know, because it's part of Russian tradition, a very, very good democratic tradition of Russia.
Your Excellency, there's been a lot of narratives being played out in the media, but looking at the events that have unfolded leading up prior to the war that has broken out, how does Poland want the Malaysian audience to perceive and understand the conflict that has been going on?
But the conflict is very simple. You know, there's one country that wants to preserve its independence and sovereignty, and another one which wants to subdue it. There's no other things linked to it. No niceties. This is really very simple. But I would like Malaysian society to understand also that the war that is going now in Europe is really dangerous for everyone, including Malaysia. We are 10,000 kilometers apart, but you know, in today's world, everything is interlinked. Let's remember that two worst world wars came out of Europe in 20th century. The second one also was felt here in Malaysia. Malaysia suffered during that war as well. This war in Ukraine has a possibility of spreading. And unfortunately, in today's world, there is a possibility of it turning into a nuclear war. And this is what Russian leaders have been threatening the world around, mentioning that maybe they would have to use nuclear arms in certain circumstances. Now, if it happens, it may very well lead to a worldwide nuclear war. We generally consider it as impossible. But I do remember well the time of the Cold War, where it was considered very much possible. It's 30 years ago. So we don't remember it anymore. This whole generation that doesn't know about it. But I would like to remember, to remind everyone that it is very much a possibility. If it happens, then you know the radioactive fallout knows no borders. No borders. Everyone will be affected by it. I'm not even speaking about economic disruption, total collapse of the world economy, especially for countries that are, like Malaysia, are so much interlinked with other world economic markets. So let us remember that this conflict is more than only about Ukraine. It's about every one of us, really.
Lastly, Your Excellency, some experts have suggested that this war could go on for a very long time. But realistically, what outcome does Poland want to see in the coming weeks?
No, free, independent, and Ukraine in its borders. I mean, within its borders, legal borders. That's quite clear. There's no other goal for the moment. And how long it may last, this I don't know. I'm not a military expert, and every military expert tells something else. So even among them, there is no unanimity on this matter.
Okay. One last question, Your Excellency. Many Ukrainians and perhaps even the Poles in Kuala Lumpur that are watching this could perhaps be a little bit comforted by some of your words while they're seeing their home countries being affected by the war that's been going on. What words of comfort can you perhaps share to some of the local Ukrainians and Poles that are in Malaysia right now?
I can only say, stay strong. As the president of Ukraine said recently, there is always a day.
Thank you, Your Excellency. I believe many Ukrainians and Poles that are in Malaysia right now could benefit a lot from some of the words of comfort that you've been able to share with us today and a lot of the great insights that you've been able to share. Itu tadi Duta Besar Poland ke Malaysia, Christoph Damniski, sedikit sebanyak mengulas mengenai konflik antara Ukraine dan Rusia. Itu sahaja perkongsian untuk Awani Global jam ini. Bersama saya, Nala Huda. Kita jumpa lagi. Salam hormat.